The Defense Department's working on new training and guidance to help its contracting officers decide whether potential contracts are worth the price. The Government Accountability Office takes a look at 32 of those contracts. Bill Woods is Director of Acquisition and Sourcing Management Issues at the Government Accountability Office. He says it's too early to say whether the Pentagon's training and guidance is working. Bill, it's good to have you on the program. Thank you for being on as always. You write in this work, the Pentagon has to take a special look and take special efforts to figure out how to price something when it does a non-competitive contract, when there's only one bid on something. How does it do it now? Thanks for coming on, Bill.
Thank you, Francis. Pricing defense contracts in a non-competitive environment is an extremely difficult proposition. Normally, when you have competition, you have two or three bidders who are providing their prices, and it's quite easy to make that comparison. But you don't have that luxury in a non-competitive environment. And it may be even more difficult when you're buying a commercial item, because normally the department would rely on prices in the commercial sector. But that can be very difficult if they don't have access to the pricing information that they need.
It's not as simple as just looking something up on Amazon and seeing what it's going for. You write in this report that there are three steps the Defense Department is taking to develop the guidance and training that they're supposed to. I'd like to talk about each of them in turn if we can.
Sure.
The first one you write, DOD issued a policy memo to provide guidance to contracting officers on the determination of price reasonableness for commercial items. What's the detail on that policy memo, Bill?
Sure. That memo came out in February of this year, just when we were beginning our work. And the fundamental message there is that contracting officers need to bear in mind that they're trying to reach a fair and reasonable price. And how they get there, there are a number of tools available to contracting officers. And this memorandum does a good job of laying out what those various tools are. Sometimes it's relying on historical pricing. Sometimes they may need additional information from the contractors themselves about what they have sold, particular items in the commercial market. And sometimes they actually need cost information. What are the labor, what costs, what are the material costs that went into producing the item? Those instances are rare, but sometimes the contracting officers need that.
The second item, the step that you write about in this report, is that the DOD plans to revise the Defense Department Federal Acquisition Regulation Supplement, DFARS, to give guidance to contracting officers on how to ask for the information. Is it as simple as just do this differently, or is there more to it than that?
That guidance came out in early August of this year, just when we were completing our work. And again, it's not as straightforward as one would think. Both the policy memo in February and the proposed revisions to the defense regulation provide an overview of the tools that are available to contracting officers to make that determination.
And the third item is, you write, DOD is developing training to complement the guidance and establishing a cadre of cost and pricing experts to assist contracting officers. The words "is developing" seem to sound to me like this is another work in progress, Bill.
It is a work in progress, but there are modules available at the Defense Acquisition University to help contracting officers make this. But the Department of Defense realizes that they need to take additional steps to provide even more training, to make current training available on a more widespread basis, as well as to develop new, more targeted and focused training to provide assistance to contracting officers.
Regarding that cadre of cost and pricing experts that you wrote about, do we have a sense of what the skill set or experience or expertise is like for that cadre, that to get a sense of how they're going to supplement or accentuate the skills of the COs?
These are likely to be people that have long experience in this area. People that work for the Defense Contract Management Agency, as well as the Defense Contract Audit Agency, who have considerable experience in pricing of not only commercial but non-commercial items.
It seems to me that part of the expertise is as much how to look at a contract and how to analyze and approach it as what the contract's for. I mean, I suppose that some of these are fairly mundane, but some of them are probably rather unique. And the people that have experience, the benefit will be in their pricing and analysis rather than in how you figure out actual numbers. Does that make sense?
It does, and it's really a mix of a variety of skills. Sometimes the contracting officers need help from people that really understand the product that they're buying. And let me give you an example. We found a number of instances where the agencies, be it the Army or the Air Force, needed support items for existing weapon systems, the B-2 bomber or the Chinook helicopter, and literally hundreds of items were being purchased on the same contract. And it's not realistic that a contracting officer would be familiar with those parts. But if they can get assistance from people, from technical people who understand what it is they're buying and have a better appreciation of what those items should cost, that can be an enormous benefit.
I mentioned as you came on that you looked at 32 commercial contracts. 12 of the 32 people asked for pricing information or cost information. 20 they did not. And about those, the 20, you write, officials determine the price is fair and reasonable based on information already available to the government, such as prices paid on previous contracts. Is that a good thing, a bad thing, or just the thing?
Oh, that's very much a good thing. If the agency already has historical pricing information available to it, in other words, if they know what they paid last year for the same item or an item very similar, that puts them in a very strong position. They can make adjustments for inflation, they can make adjustments for increases or reductions in quantity, and they have a much better idea of what it is they should be paying. So if they have historical prices, that's very much a good thing.
So that's a nice percentage then, 20 out of 32, where the various branches had maintained an inventory of information, had saved their data, and were able to go back and compare. Is that a fair way to read that information?
That's correct. But in other cases, and in our instance, it was 12 of the 32, the agency simply didn't have that luxury. The item was a first-time buy, for example, so they didn't have the historical information, or the quantities were so different, or the items themselves were so different that they needed to rely on other data to make that call.
Out of those 12, in six of them, officials, you write, requested cost data, and for six of them, requested only pricing information. Why was that a shortcoming in your view?
We wanted to take a look at both. And let me give you an example of the cost data. The Air Force was looking to buy some test stand equipment to test various components of the B-2 bomber. And this is something they had not purchased in the past, so they didn't have the historical information. And the pricing information that they had available, the contracting officer determined, was simply inadequate. So they needed to go and ask for cost information. And once they had that cost information, they were able to make a fair and reasonable price determination and to negotiate a lower price.
The work that you've done, no recommendations this time around, but the work that you've done, your report says DOD stated would assist the department's implementation of Section 831. That's from the National Defense Authorization Act, and that speaks to the implementation of all three of those issues that we talked about at the beginning. Is that correct, Bill?
That's correct. And the fact that the Department of Defense had already moved out on providing the guidance that the Congress was looking for led us to conclude that we really didn't need recommendations at this point. We needed to step back, let the department implement the steps that it was taking, and then perhaps in the future we can go back and take a look at how those at the outcomes based on that guidance.
You don't get many chances to say, well done, we're going to get out of the way, do you, Bill?
This is one of them. And frankly, when we don't have something meaningful to contribute, we will back off and let the department implement what it says it's going to implement and move on.